Cold Sleep, written by Gloss and read by Wilfriede0815. Fandom, The Locked Tomb, rating general audiences, no archive warnings apply. Summary: something is stalking the skeletons of Kanan House. There is no coming back from this. The Dawn cleaning squad finds the victim shattered into countless pieces at the foot of a crumbling outdoor staircase on the southeast side of the building. Mops and buckets in hand, they stand watch over their fallen comrade. It lies prone. Or what would be prone, if its face had not broken along with the rest of its major bones. The tibia, scapula, even both patellae, are fractured. But it's worse than that. The fragments and shards are, further, ground down, as if underfoot, as if there were embers that needed killing. A jewel-green beetle scampers over the scattered ribs, its chitin glinting in the sun. This was no accident, they all agree. They cannot speak. The tongue is a muscle, and they have been denied flesh in the second, for some third, existence. But they agree nonetheless. Their consciousness is such that most of it is shared, a common hum running amongst all of them, with the occasional individual note. One lopes off to find a flesh supervisor, teacher, or another priest, while the others drop to crouches and examine what's left of their mate. It was, they think, one of the first of their kind. A man, while it lived, had predeceased the end of the world by mere months. The humans who did their work here preferred the non-resurrected for their initial experiments. Later, when they ran out of ready access to anti-apocalyptic material, they devised various methods for counteracting and diffusing post-resurrection energetic signatures. The skeletons never cared one way or the other about the research. They are products. They were never participants. They crouch and wait, and the star arcs overhead in its deathly course. Their shadows grow longer, then shorter, and shift angles from acute to oblique. The sky above is sharply blue. The weeds and moss beneath their calcanei and metatarsals are dead gray and crumbling. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. One of the priests finally arrives and wrings his hands and bids them to clean up this unfortunate situation. While issuing these instructions, he does not look directly at them. That in itself is far from remarkable, but today it seems pointed. They sweep up the larger pieces, then crouch again and pluck tiny shards and pebby ossdust from the stonework. Their animating theorems do not encompass anything like grief, let alone mourning rituals. Yet they gather around the pile of fragments and link arms. Without synovial capsules, their elbow joints creak, grind, and click. Some days later, a courier skeleton on the mezzanine goes missing. Its absence is only noted that evening when it does not appear for scheduled cleaning and disinfectant spray. What may be half its mandible turns up on the edge of the lobby fountain. It has been ripped apart at the symphysis menti. The edge is jagged and knife sharp. They know there are monsters here. Teacher and the other two meat puppets refuse to acknowledge that truth. Most of their thoughts are in the general hum, but the skeletons are not privy to all. There are dark things and unexpected shadows, and the constant protesting howl of the sea, and many, many things that go bump in the night. The facility below shudders occasionally. Other times, it creaks as if to break apart. One of the relatively younger skeletons is on window cleaning duty, lowered in a hip girdle from the most solid part of the roof. Its body died after the resurrection, and its lacquered spirit was one of the last laid down before the lictors departed, so the others tend to regard it as a know-nothing baby. Through the salt-grimed glass, as it twists in the wind, it perceives a hulking shape. The room is, like 90% of the facility, long empty. Its original purpose now unclear. But the thing is all too real. It lifts a massive head and tosses back a shaggy mane of kelp and flotsam. When it roars, the sea joins the clamor. The young skeleton scrambles out of its girdle and flies to the deafening dark waves. Its note drops out of the Canaan House hum. It moves yet, sees more, strides toward the carcasses of civilization on the seafloor. The water is frigid and dark, but the skeletons never needed to breathe or blink. The pressure below tries to snap it apart, but it was built to survive through the worst of time's horrors. Down here, life goes on. Elaborating into bacterial mats that surge and throb, chemotrophic snails with wiggly antennae, petal-pink tube worms and squat lobsters bickering over territory. Perhaps the skeletons were always meant for this, to explore the new worlds being born from the old, lost one. Maybe they always had a greater purpose than poorly maintaining an abandoned facility. Or perhaps, just maybe, they escape when they must, and develop, all over again, a sense of self-preservation. Their borrowed, installed souls start to flower and feed. They live. The end.